fall of 2013, cocky suburban Northern Virginia boy butt heads with a country boy from Illinois, and I'm incredibly thankful for the opportunity to preach with Nate, one of my best friends in the world, and thankful for a lot of you as well. I see family, I see great friends, and I see teachers who have poured their lives into me, teachers who have cried with me, who have been there, and it's been a journey. I think it's really cool. Me and Nate came in the same semester. We should have graduated in the spring. We didn't, and for different reasons, we still get to graduate together, but it's just cool how God's worked, and John 21 is where you can turn. I think most of you probably knew this, but Nate talked a lot about coming to God, about salvation, being accepted of him, becoming his children. Did you know that after salvation, there are things that God requires of us, things that he expects of us? It's not a done deal at salvation. Quote here that I'll read for you. Trusting Christ is not an arrival, but the starting point of an eternal journey of union and communion that begins here and now. Not an arrival. Salvation is not simply an arrival, but the starting point of an eternal journey of union and communion that begins here and now. The question that we'll start out with is this: what is the Christian life? I think the vast majority of us in this room would claim to know Christ, would claim to be Christians. But now when we look at what God expects of us, when we look at the next step in our lives as Christians, what is the Christian life? It's a basic question, but it's an important question. I think there are probably three answers that people normally answer this question with. A lot of times it's an emotional answer. The Christian life is feeling a certain way. It's feeling God's presence in a certain way and just getting those feelings when you read your Bible. And I just really felt great. And maybe you have friends that you work with that talk about their Christian lives and how great it makes them feel. Certainly one way to view the Christian life. Another way that people view it is performance. My Christian life is me doing certain things. God expects certain things of me, and there's lists in the Bible of things that I should do. There's lists of things that I shouldn't do. So I'll just make sure I do all these things and don't do all these things, and I'll be good. Performance-based Christian life, that's really all you can really ask of me. Another one that I thought of is Christianity as an intellectual exercise. Christianity is simply reading the Bible and reading books and reading theologians and getting to know a bunch of facts and adding to your mental repertoire of what you know about God. I suggest that Christianity is none of these things. It involves these things, but the Christian life cannot be defined simply in one of those ways. I'm sure that there are other theories to define the Christian life than what I'm about to tell you. But my purpose is not to tell you about every single little aspect of the Christian life and to tell you every little thing that God expects of you. We have God's word and it does a great job at that. I suggest to you that the Christian life can be defined in two words, and those two words are following Jesus. If you've spent much time in church, which most of you have, you've heard a lot about following Christ. You've probably heard a lot of messages preached about being a disciple, about following Jesus every day. Maybe you've preached messages along those lines. Maybe you've read books. Maybe you've written books about following Christ. But what I want to do is from John chapter 21, just to look at three things that are characteristics of a healthy pursuit of Christ. So we pick up in John chapter 21, but where are we? Jesus Christ claimed to be the Son of God. He came to earth and he preached and he condemned a lot of people. He told the religious people that claimed to be great and righteous and near perfect that they weren't, that they fell short, that they came short of what God expected of them. And so the religious people hated him. The nation that he came to save, Israel, hated him. So they handed him over to the Romans and demanded that he be killed. And so they crucified him. They crucified Jesus, the Son of God, who had 12 disciples who followed him. And sure, there are many followers. He had many people that followed him, but 12 that he claimed as his own and that he took under his wings and really taught and spent time with. And now they have apparently lost their Messiah. He had been crucified. He was dead. But the good news for Christianity is that 3 days later, he rose again. The resurrection is a historical fact. After Christ arose, he appeared to his disciples a few times. John 21 gives us one of those accounts. We'll start reading in verse number 1, and we probably won't read all the verses because it's a 25-verse chapter, but we'll start reading in verse number 1, and we'll jump around a little bit. We'll get three things about our pursuit of Christ. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and on this wise showed he himself. There were together Simon Peter and Thomas called Didymus and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee and the sons of Zebedee and two other of his disciples. Simon Peter saith unto them, I go a-fishing. They say unto him, We also go with thee. They went forth and entered into a ship immediately, and that night they caught nothing. So far, the disciples, I guess they're a little bit discouraged about what's been going on with Christ. And Peter says, I go a-fishing. And what's significant about that is that Peter, most of you know, before he followed Christ, before he was a disciple, he was a fisherman. And so Peter's saying, I'm going to go back to what I know, fishing. Verse number 5. Then Jesus saith unto them, let's get verse number 4 first. But when the morning was now come, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples knew not that it was Jesus. Then Jesus saith unto them, Children, have ye any meat? They answered him, No. And he said unto them, Cast the net on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. They cast therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitudes of fishes. Therefore that disciple whom Jesus loved saith unto Peter, It is the Lord. Now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he girt his fisher's coat unto him, for he was naked, and did cast himself into the sea. Our first characteristic of a healthy pursuit of Christ is a passionate pursuit. A passionate pursuit. You know, Peter was known for his gung-ho attitude. Throughout the four accounts that we have, the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Peter is constantly opening his mouth, sometimes saying things he should say, sometimes things that he shouldn't say. Just a gung-ho kind of guy, a go-getter. In Matthew, he gave the great declaration of who Christ was. He did the same thing in John chapter 6, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. He often was the disciple who would stand up and be confident when the others weren't so sure. Good quality to have. In Matthew 14, he actually walked on water. He stepped out of the boat, and he really did walk on water. It happened. But sometimes his gung-ho attitude worked in a negative way. And his most notorious error is found in John chapter 18. Many of you know what happened there. For sake of time, we won't turn. Jesus informed the disciples that all of them would leave him. They wouldn't stick by his side through his crucifixion that he had prophesied. They were going to leave him. They were going to give up on him. And Peter said, No, Lord, I will never do that. Though they may do it, though everybody else may forsake you, I'm not going to. And Jesus tells Peter, Peter, you're going to deny me three times before the cock crows. Came to pass. Peter denied him three times. The account is there in John chapter 18. You could go and read it. But in spite of his obvious mistakes and faults, Peter passionately pursued Christ. We just read it in these verses. While the other disciples hesitated, Peter threw caution to the wind. He jumped in the water and ran to Jesus. Swam to Jesus, whatever it was. I don't think it's really clear in the text. He got his coat on and he went to Jesus. In spite of his error, in spite of his failure, he was passionate about his pursuit of Christ. So here's the question. How passionate are you in your pursuit of Christ? I was on Facebook last night because I'm a millennial, and that's what we do. But I actually like an A.W. Tozer page. They like share quotes from him. He's a great Christian writer, and I like to read some of his material. And here's a quote that he gave. A true disciple does not consider Christianity a part-time commitment. He has become a Christian in all parts of his life. He has reached the point where there is no turning back. He has become a Christian in all parts of his life. How passionate are you in your pursuit of Christ? Where did Peter's passion come from, though? I mean, certainly, there's an element of personality to that. We see everything that he does, there's passion to. He's a go-getter. But it's more than just personality. Why was Peter so passionate about Christ? Perhaps it's because he spent 3 years following him. 3 years, almost every second of every day, with Jesus Christ, spending time with him. So how do we become passionate about Jesus Christ? He was crucified, he was buried, he rose again, and then he ascended, and he's not on earth anymore physically. I can't walk down the street and follow Jesus' little ways and have a conversation with him physically. How do we do that? How do we become passionate about Christ? By reading his word. Everything that we need to know about Jesus Christ is in the word of God, in the Bible. And the only way that we can have a genuine, not artificial, passion about Christ, a genuine gratitude for his work on the cross, is to spend time with him. To spend time reading his word, studying his word, obeying his word, making it a part of your heart and life. Prayer. Dedicating time in your busy day to talk to God. Obedience. Doing what you know to do. Peter's pursuit of Christ was passionate, but it was also enduring. We just talked about the story. Peter had just denied Christ 3 times. Just like he said he would not. Peter's little fishing trip was likely a result of the massive spiritual failure that he had just experienced. Maybe you're not here yet in your Christian life if you are a Christian, but you're going to experience massive spiritual failures. You're going to mess up. My sophomore year, one of my really good friends here at school, Hunter Conkle, was getting ready to graduate. I think this was like April, just a couple weeks before graduation. And Will was with us, and I think Ethan Slepidus, I think you were with us, and we went to Applebee's. We had a gift card. So we went to Applebee's, and we were just, yeah, funny, right? College students, okay. We're at Applebee's, and we're talking, and I don't know how it came up. It's been like 3 years, but Hunter piped up and said, "You know what, guys? If I've learned one thing at college, it's that sanctification is a process." And he said, "There are things that I came to school struggling with that I thought I would get under control, that I thought I would have total victory in." And he said, "I'm still struggling there." I would like to echo the same sentiments. When I came to school, it was like, okay, one day I'll start reading my Bible, I'll start being serious about God, and then once I do that, by the time I graduate, certainly, I'll be good to go. I won't struggle with those things anymore. Not how it worked. And actually, for me, things got worse before they got better. I don't know exactly what your journey will look like, but I know that it will be just that, a journey. There will be hills and valleys, and you will experience massive spiritual failure. But what made the difference for Peter? Why was he able to continue? Why was he able to endure? Can I say this without making a theological statement? Why was he able to persevere through difficulty, through failure? Number one, a victorious, risen Christ. He saw that the Messiah that he followed was exactly who he claimed to be. He saw that Jesus Christ was the real deal. Because he is the only man to ever rise himself from the dead, to ever have victory over the grave. He saw him do exactly what he would say. And he said, "That's a man and that's a God who is worthy of my service and my dedication and my life." A victorious, risen Christ. And secondly, his renewed call to service. Later on in the chapter, Jesus, we'll look at this a little bit more in a minute, but Jesus tells Peter 3 times to feed his sheep. "Feed my sheep, feed my sheep, feed my sheep." No doubt Peter had experienced massive spiritual failure. Jesus had appeared to the disciples a couple times already. So he knew that Jesus hadn't totally given up on him. What Jesus was doing when he had this conversation with Peter at the end of this chapter was restoring him to service. "Peter, you haven't gone too far. You can still be used by God." And he was used by God. A passionate pursuit, an enduring pursuit, and lastly, a focused pursuit. Jump down to verse number 15. Jesus called them to the shore. The disciples came after Peter did. And that's where we pick up here in verse number 15. "So when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these?" He saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my lambs. He saith to him again the second time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? He saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my sheep. He saith unto him the third time, Simon, Peter, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved because he said unto him the third time, Lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus saith unto him, Feed my sheep. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, when thou wast young, thou girdest thyself and walkest whither thou wouldest. But when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee and carry thee whither thou wouldest not. This spake he, signifying by what death he should glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he saith unto him, Follow me. Then Peter, turning about, seeth the disciple whom Jesus loved following, which also leaned on his breast at supper, and said, Lord, which is he that betrayeth thee? Peter, seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? What shall John do? What shall the disciple whom Jesus loved do? What shall this man do? Jesus saith unto him, If I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Follow thou me. Again, we see Peter's brash arrogance. And back in John chapter 18, the story that we've talked about a couple times already, his confidence was in himself, not Christ. I mean, God himself said, Peter, you're going to deny me, you're going to forsake me. And he still said no. His confidence was still in himself. He thought that he was better than his peers. Lord, though they may, all of these other guys, the other 11, they might forsake thee. They're not quite as strong and spiritual as I am, so they might a little bit just, you know, go out. But me, I'm not going to, and I don't really care what you say. He thought he was better than his peers. He thought he was smarter than Christ. But Jesus, in this account, confronts Peter's arrogance and resultant failure head on. He doesn't just sweep it under the rug. He confronts it. It's no coincidence that three times Jesus asked him, Do you love me? Three times Peter denied him. Jesus' solution was simple. Jesus' next step for Peter's life was simple. Follow thou me. Comparison, ambition, and regret all take our focus off of Christ. Comparison, ambition, and regret. Comparison, looking around, constantly assessing what other people are doing, constantly wanting to be better than everybody else, constantly wanting to prove yourself and wanting others to think highly of you. Ambition, wanting to think highly of yourself, wanting position and status and applause. Regret, looking back over your shoulder. All these take our focus off of Christ when he simply says, Follow thou me. I mean, it's almost sad here. Jesus just restored Peter to service. And he's still saying, but Jesus, what about John? Like, what's he going to do? Hello, follow thou me. You worry about me. Stop looking around. Stop looking at John. Follow thou me. Stop looking out. Stop looking in. Start looking up. A focused pursuit. This summer, I got to intern at Calvary Baptist in Elkins Park, Pennsylvania. And we were driving to Richmond. I had several experiences with the church van that I was able to drive. You can ask me later about that. But one of the experiences was I got to drive to Richmond every summer. They go on a mission trip to Richmond, and so I got to drive the guys' van. And they would just get me monologuing and the team guys, and I would just stop paying attention to the van that I was following. I was supposed to be following the van in front of me that Pastor McMenamin was driving. And they would just get me talking about whatever, and he'd, you know, change lanes, and I'd start to pass him, and he'd just, you know, look over at me like, okay, fall back in line. I lost focus. And who knows where I could have ended up if, you know, somebody hadn't pointed out that he was over there. Who knows where we'll end up if we lose sight of Christ. Trusting Christ is not an arrival, but the starting point of an eternal journey of union and communion that begins here and now. To the sinner, the wanderer, the broken, and the skeptic, Jesus says, Come, believe, become my child. To the Christian, Jesus says, follow. Christian, students, my brothers and sisters, we will face great joy, but great sorrow. Our lives will not be easy. We will fail miserably. Loved ones will suffer greatly. The devil and the world around you and the flesh within you works night and day to destroy you. Your only hope in this life is to follow Jesus.